Welcome to the U-Turn Podcast. This is the place to connect to who you truly are. We're bringing PhDs, experts, and leaders to help you elevate your mindset in your work life and in your love life so that you can see things differently and truly love your world. I'm Ashley Stahl. I'm a career expert, author, and TEDx speechwriter and booker, and I'm excited to bring you in to this week's episode. U-Turn podcast friends, I'm so excited to bring Dr. Amelia Kelly onto the show. She's a trauma-informed therapist, an author, a podcaster, a researcher. She has a whole array of specialties. They include art therapy, internal family systems, some of you know IFS, EMDR and brain spotting, as well as being a certified meditation and yoga instructor. So full of modalities. And she's also the author of Gaslighting Recovery for Women, The Complete Guide to Recognizing Manipulation and Achieving Freedom from Emotional Abuse. She's worked on other books. She's a contributing author for Psychology Today. And I'm really excited to dive into her book about gaslighting, because I know that gaslighting doesn't just have to take place in romantic relationships. It can take place in everyday relationships. And I want to help everybody with Dr. Amelia here to just take a look at what is really going on. What does this really look like? Dr. Kelly, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me and for that lovely introduction.
Yeah, I love all the things that you're focused on. Those are some really incredible modalities. Like you, I don't want to flatter myself and say you remind me of me, but I love the variety that you have in your training. IFS is so powerful. Brain spotting is so powerful. EMDR. So each of these modalities are so transformative for people. What was it with the whole body of work you have that drove you to write a book about gaslighting?
First and foremost, I think the journey of empowerment has always been so huge in my heart, and empowering the clients I work with, and really, honestly, friends, family, just anyone to speak up for themselves. You know, I take great issue in the myth of the perfect time. There's only the perfect time to speak your truth and to express your feelings. It's not true. And what I found was that gaslighting was one of the most powerful, coercive ways to quiet people and to make them feel like they cannot speak up for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so that, in addition to honestly having written my first book with a survivor of domestic violence and learning so much through her experience and the gaslighting she experienced, it just felt like the next book that needed to come. It almost like a sister book to the first one.
Okay. So I think a lot of people maybe listening right now, they have an idea maybe of what gaslighting is, but can you give us your definition or help somebody? For me, what it means is I think I'm seeing the color red and somebody says, no, it's blue. And then I start to question my eyes. Like, am I colorblind? Is it not red anymore? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would your definition of gaslighting be?
So that was perfect. It was a perfect example. It is any time that a person, entity, structure is trying to gain control over someone else through emotional manipulation and abuse tactics that are meant to instill a sense of doubt, a sense of uncertainty. It is meant to break down your inner dialogue, your inner voice about what you know to be true. And this can have so many negative implications in so many ways, which I'm sure we'll chat about.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's pretty potent if somebody can have an influence on you where you start to question yourself. One of the things that struck me, I dated a narcissist, like I feel like he's diagnosable as somebody who has a graduate degree in psychology, which, I mean, I could go on forever about how did I not see it? But this is my question is, I met so many powerful, smart, competent women who I would be surprised that they would be gaslit because they're so with it and so competent. I'm like, how could somebody get one by you? You're so sharp. So I want to challenge that myth that maybe this happens for people with alleged low self-esteem. I think that can be the case, but what can you share about who tends to be, I mean, for lack of a better term, a victim of gaslighting?
So you are right in the sense that self-esteem can have an impact, and we should touch on that at some point when we talk about protective factors against being gaslit. But here's the thing. Being human, can make you susceptible to gaslighting, just existing, just interacting, especially, and one of the reasons why writing a book specifically for women was so important. Not that men cannot experience gaslighting and honestly could probably benefit from reading the book as well, because the skills can be applied to both genders. But there's a nuance to women being targeted because there are systems, if you think of patriarchy or, you know, ways that women have been shut down for really centuries, that thrive off of seeking power over them. Mm-hmm. So just literally being a woman, honestly, can make you susceptible. Being an empath can make you susceptible. Someone who has, you know, the ability to feel deeply and be compassionate for others. Someone who, gosh, gaslighters, emotional vultures, people who want to take advantage of you, they will play on that.
Yeah, I believe it. What about, like, is there roots? Like, if we look back at somebody's relationship with their family, mm-hmm. how does your family system, if at all, play into your susceptibility or your comfort with mm-hmm. being gaslit? I hate to say comfort, but I imagine some people, maybe they had parents that taught them to doubt their own senses, and they had parents that taught them to silence their own inner voice. And because mm-hmm. of that, maybe later in life, they're more susceptible to being attracted to someone that does the same thing.
Well, and I don't even know if attracted would necessarily be the term I would use. What you are saying is a huge component to this. If you are not given the right to stand up for yourself, the right to disagree, the right to have your own opinion as a child, then that can make you feel, and it can create this inner narrative or schema that your perception, your feelings, what you have to say is not valid, which you can see where that would be prime real estate for a gaslighter to buy into.
Yeah.
But when you were using the word attracted, I think what comes to mind for me is what's normalized or what neurologically is comfortable or familiar.
Yeah.
You know, I speak sometimes about there was an instance where I experienced professional gaslighting that was directed at me. And in that very much, so again, saying I could be gaslit, you know, any of us can be gaslit. But when it happened, I will tell you, I had this like nausea. I had a flip in my stomach that signaled to me that something was off. And it was so overwhelming when it happened. If I wasn't aware of gaslighting, or if I had been primed to just take that sort of emotional manipulation from someone, that same response probably wouldn't be as visceral. Yeah. I would not notice that quite as much. And so you can see how if someone doesn't get that kind of jerk reaction in the body, that somatic reaction, oh, wow, something is wrong, it can make it easier for a gaslighter to move through the stages and take advantage of someone.
So what are the stages of gaslighting? I think that's a really interesting topic for people who are maybe feeling in their body like something doesn't feel right about this dynamic. How can they start to turn that into, I don't know, like looking at the stages, starting to really notice it in a deeper way?
So the first and foremost thing will be that little lies and exaggerations will start. I mean, you're going to have someone who's going to use different tactics just to kind of see where it lands. You know, they're going to try it out, see what your reaction was, see what they can get away with. And it starts this negative feedback loop internally when someone does that. The next step is repetition. Like you really need something to happen more than once, happen regularly for it to start to be normalized. And during this time, the goal of the gaslighter is to make sure that you're primed for those worser stages, so to speak. Because after repetition has happened, the gaslighter is going to escalate. Like they're going to take what they were initially doing and they're going to kick it up a notch. And they're going to get more ridiculous, honestly, with their tactics. They're going to be more flagrant. The lies will be, you'll literally have a gaslighter using a denial tactic and you have proof in front of them and they will still deny. And those moments are usually coupled when someone tries to challenge the gaslighter. And that's why I do think it's important to understand that if you are being gaslit, it is normally not the safest or healthiest choice to confront the gaslighter in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What, at that instance where I had experienced that professional gaslighting, I got off the phone and I was dumbstruck. I was just shocked. I didn't call that person back to say, you know what, you were gaslighting me. Instead, I called a support person and said, can I tell you what just happened? Is this gaslighting? Is this weird? What? Am I off? Should I feel this way? It's like getting that sense of touching back with reality by talking to a safe person.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you don't do that, whether it be because there's an enmeshment, you don't feel safe, you don't have that support person to talk to. The gaslighter is going to work on wearing you down.
Mm-hmm.
And they really want to break down your emotional energy. They want to start attacking things like your self-esteem and how you feel about other things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Not just that particular situation they're gaslighting you about, but how you feel about your ability to take care of yourself or express your feelings in general, which can lead to the target, the person being gaslit, looking to that other person for their sense of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads into the next stage, which is codependency.
Mm-hmm.
And codependency, I talk about that in the book. I share, thankfully, CODA.org. I don't know if you've heard of them. Love CODA.
Yep.
I love what they have to offer to people who want to learn more about codependency. They gave us permission to share their denial patterns, their all their different patterns in the book. So you can literally look through and figure out what kind of codependent am I? Because we need to obviously make sure people understand codependency just doesn't mean that you can't live without someone. That's not at all what codependency is. It means that you forfeit your well-being for someone else.
Right.
And then it can lead to different negative patterns.
Okay.
Now, from codependency, there's going to be this point where you might actually want to get out. Like you really start to feel like this relationship, if it's a romantic relationship, is not healthy. This work environment is not healthy. This doctor is not treating me correctly. Whoever is gaslighting you, in order to keep you hooked, they have to instill a sense of false hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the cycle of abuse comes in. We need to have that honeymoon period, or sometimes I call it the emotional slot machine,
mm-hmm.
where you get those little intermittent rewards to keep you hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but seeing this in some of my clients, it's almost like emotional whiplash. They'll come in 1 week and they are ready to get out. They'll tell me all the things that are wrong with the relationship. And then the next session,
We had a great weekend.
They're making all these changes.
Right.
And then finally from there, the final and honestly where things can get very dangerous is once they know they have you hooked into that cycle, now they can dominate and control you all over, all together. And that's speaking to the people, a lot of the people who are going to pick up this book where they say, what do I do? Like, how do I deal with having been under someone else's control for so long that I don't even know what I like anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because listening to you talk through these stages, they're pretty cut and dry. And I know people who have gone through this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, manipulative and intentional and planned, but it's not like a gaslighter is sitting there with their gaslighting 101 guide waiting, just chip on through the process and break this person down. So how is this so cut and dry when people are so different? Like you would think that gaslighting might look different amongst different people, but it really seems like it's the same in a lot of ways. Like the process that people go through of like trying on the smaller lies, starting to get the person to question themselves, asserting control. I had a really good friend. She was in a relationship that was like such a love story. And 3 years uh-huh. later, she found out that he was lying and had a complete double life and had a baby with someone else and
wow.
lied that he, couldn't be with her for New Year's and sent a sad I'm sick picture at 3 years into their relationship. But he was at his gender reveal party that night. So what I want to ask you is there gaslighting is the behavior, but is it almost always rooted in some sort of mental health disorder? Or is this just like a little shitty habit that some people tend to have? I've read that 1 out of 25 Americans are a sociopath. So I'm just curious to understand, like, where do gaslighters fit into the mental health spectrum?
So when it comes to the different areas you were talking about, from sociopaths to, I don't know if you said narcissist, but
yeah,
narcissism to just mental health in general, it is a tactic that is used by multiple different types of manipulators, and we all manipulate for different reasons. So the reason behind why someone gaslights might differ, but its presence amongst especially personality disorders, such as, you know, different oppositional or obsessive compulsive or narcissism, emotional vultures, manipulators, things like that. Gaslighting is a very effective tactic to control someone.
So it's a tactic that a lot of people who are not mentally healthy may be using.
Yes, it is not a disorder.
It's a tactic.
It's a tactic. Yes, a very powerful and dangerous tactic.
Yes.
There are instances, and I touch on this just briefly in the book, where there are going to be non-narcissistic gaslighting situations,
okay,
which is kind of hard to imagine. Huh. But if you look at someone who is, for instance, trying to sustain control over a group, like you can look at something like racialized gaslighting.
Yeah.
Or someone trying to gaslight to get ahead in a job.
But isn't there a narcissism to that? Like you can have narcissism, but not be a narcissist personality disorder, right? There's
absolutely
a level of narcissism to trying to get someone to doubt what they think and believe what you see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
It can really just be a crappy, horrible way to treat someone too, to be honest.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, to separate the two, I think it's important to separate the full disorder of narcissistic personality disorder from gaslighting. I do think that's important.
Yes.
But can we be acting selfishly and self-centeredly and egotistically and with a narcissistic attitude when we are gaslighting? I would say most likely.
Yeah. Okay. So you kind of brought us back to that moment where someone perhaps realizes, I don't even know who I am anymore. And I want to get to that moment because I think some people, we all get lost in different ways in our relationships and all sorts of ships, whether it's our work relationship, our romantic relationship. So I want to talk about healing. So once we've taken a look now at the gaslighting and the control over and the codependency, can you talk a little bit about, like, how can somebody recognize when they're in codependency and how can they start to heal from that entire experience of gaslighting?
Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you are disconnected from yourself, you are becoming apathetic or numb to yourself, you don't see yourself doing the things you used to do, you're not spending time with the people you used to spend time with, really that it can literally feel like a separation from the self. That's a pretty good indicator that you have been experiencing perpetual gaslighting and emotional abuse, honestly. And in that situation, knowing what's happening, which is, I think, why it's good, we kind of always start this conversation with, what is it? What does it look like? And when is it present? That's really important because that can help give you that sense of reality. Honestly, space. Any way that you can create space, whether it be mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually from the other person, is so crucial when overcoming gaslighting. And I know that's not always easy for everyone. You can literally be able to cut off a relationship, or sometimes it just looks like limited contact. But the thing is, the more you're exposed to gaslighting, the more effective it is.
I think space is so powerful. Some people, I feel like they identify as like an empath or intuitive, and they think, you know, I'm so connected to how I feel, I can act from that, and maybe not noticing that they've gotten that distance from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
To me, codependency is like contorting yourself to prevent someone else from feeling something or experiencing something.
Like, I love that.
Contorting where you are. So let's say that somebody listening now is, yeah, there does feel like there's some distance from me and myself. And I feel a little lost in this. I know space is powerful and people don't always realize how much they need it. Mm-hmm. And I know that has a lot to do with the brain, right? Like you have the, I think it's the limbic brain, like the reptilian brain.
Yes.
You know, the alligator, father alligators who eat their babies. And then eventually we develop the mammalian brain on top of it, a part that has feelings and knows don't eat your own for Darwinistic reasons.
Right.
And then on top of that, the prefrontal cortex, which is, I guess, the definition of flipping your lid. It's like you're dysregulated. You can't see clearly. So I imagine space, when you're in something so dysregulating that you don't even realize maybe is powerful for you to start to come home to yourself. How do you communicate with someone that maybe you're in an intimate relationship with that you're going to take space? Because I imagine gaslighting is just the ultimate tool to undo that request.
Honestly, you do not owe them an explanation. You don't. It's safer in any way that you can to fortify yourself and expand your connection with yourself. So as you create the space from them, you create more closeness with yourself. Mm-hmm. For instance, literally the session I was just in before we met today, someone who's struggling to get out. Mm-hmm. And when I was speaking with her, I'd asked her, you know, is there anyone in your life other than me that you can go talk to about this that is going to back you up and is going to let you lean and fall and going to cheerlead you in any way? And they suddenly just looked at me stunned. No, I don't have anyone to talk to about this. And so honestly, we pulled back from trying to correct behaviors and we made a plan of a meetup she was going to go to between now and next session so she can go find like-minded people. It's something that she can safely go do. It's not going to rock the boat. It's not going to increase any negative dynamics between her and her partner. It's just going to help her fortify herself. When you find people that you trust, and if you have people that you can trust, much like I said, I called someone immediately to touch base, gather your evidence if you feel you need to, and share it with someone who is safe, not the gaslighter. And if this is happening, for instance, in a work setting, instead of addressing it with that person who is the gaslighter, talking to, for instance, HR or someone who has confidentiality, and you can process and try to figure out a plan of how to create as much distance as is possible.
Mm-hmm. I love this and like the empowerment that's available at any time for somebody to realize that. I feel like life happens in seasons and moments. It's like we're in seasons where it's sometimes it can be multiple years where you don't know what you're going to do next. You're in contemplation or pre-contemplation of what's next. And then there's like these moments where suddenly you decide it's time to change seasons. And it sounds like that moment of saying, I need space, is a culmination of having had enough, having realized it enough, having processed it enough. Obviously, reading your book is one way for somebody to get with the program. If they're feeling like maybe they're being gaslit and they don't fully get it yet. But what would you say for people who are wanting to heal or wanting to start just moving that process forward a little bit, that maybe they're starting to get that little whisper? What would be like the first 1, 2, 3 steps that they could kind of do, if any?
So as you work to get close to yourself, figuring out, and I offer all different types of ways to do this in the book, because some people prefer the body, some people prefer the mind, some people like to write, some people like yoga. There's going to be something that resonates for all of us, but take a moment and think about something that has brought you connectedness with yourself in the past, something that maybe you haven't been doing or something you wanted to do, and commit to doing that. And so really great ways to manifest that would be, whether it be journaling, writing out what you're feeling in that moment, writing out what's happening, putting it out of the body and out of the mind and physically in front of you. If you're not much of a writer and you're just not, that's not your forte, you can be doing this through art. You can be doing this through movement. You can dedicate the next time you move your body in whatever way it is to expelling the tension out of your body. Like anytime you reparent yourself a little bit and you spend time listening for just a moment and just getting quiet and not trying to fix the situation, but reconnecting and fortifying with yourself, that's huge. I do think it's important also to understand how trauma manifests, what that can look like, what things that you're experiencing are probably a response to the gaslighting. And so for that reason, you know, that's something I do encourage also to make sure that you're not minimizing your experience, because if you've been gaslit for a very long time, you can almost end up gaslighting yourself and minimizing your own feelings. So anything that validates your experience and validates your feelings is absolutely crucial.
It's, first of all, I have to say, this is such an interesting topic. Those of you listening, I was just telling Dr. Amelia that I moved into a new house. There's movers ringing the doorbell. My dog turned around. I'm sitting on the floor. But I'm so enrolled in everything you're sharing, because this is such a common experience that people don't even realize is happening.
Right.
And feels so important for people to realize, if you are questioning your own capabilities because of a conversation dynamic with someone in your life, any dynamic, having that support system is so crucial to kind of do a perception check. Okay, obviously, this all lends itself to the idea of self-esteem and confidence. Yes, some women, you know, might feel like, I'm really confident. I can't believe this happened. But I know that all of us, you're making this point of gaslighting yourself. Mm-hmm. I remember when I got out of my relationship, it was like years ago, like maybe a decade ago, with a guy. It was like a 6-month situationship. And he was, I genuinely feel like he had narcissist personality disorder. And the gaslighting was so strong that, and I'm an empath, so I would have compassion for his hard upbringing. I would have compassion for the fact that he had an outburst like that, or that he would negate me because he would come back. And our bodies get so addicted to those chemicals. And I remember a therapist saying to me at the time, when I finally got the strength to actually ask for space and break up with him, was, Ashley, first you're going to cry about not having him anymore, and then you're going to cry that you gaslit yourself into staying in that.
That's a beautiful way to put that.
Yeah. And I remember months later feeling exactly that, feeling like, how did I do that to myself? Like, how did I let this person feed off of me like this? So I think there's a lot of self-forgiveness, self-esteem building that happens after this, during this. So what are some ways that people listening, what are some quick win ways for them to increase their self-esteem?
So one thing I think is really interesting and important to point out is the difference between self-esteem and confidence, and that one does feed the other. But confidence being our belief or our enthusiasm for trying hard things, being okay with messing up, feeling strong within our sense of self and body, even if we might not be perfect at something. That's when, you know, confidence can exude. You can have this, I don't want to call it an air, an energy of lovingness towards the self, even when you make mistakes. Self-esteem is the foundation to having confidence, though, because self-esteem is your ability to understand that you deserve to be treated well and you deserve to be safe just because you are human.
Like the basic worthiness, the birthright.
Yes, exactly. And so one of the best ways to care for your self-esteem is not to have relationships where people cut down your self-esteem.
Sounds pretty straightforward. And it's hard because sometimes people have family bonds, like their fundamental relationships in their life where there's toxicity there. And, you know, they want to see their siblings, but maybe it's a parent or it's a sibling that has this dynamic with them that is so toxic for their well-being. And so I'm imagining one topic for gaslighting is boundaries. Like, how do you have boundaries with a gaslighter that is somehow in your life, even if you don't want them to be?
So with boundaries, one of the things to really remember is that no one has to agree with your boundary. No one has to even respect your boundary, but you have the right to express it. And then you have the right to follow through with it. So if there is, let's say hypothetically, you said brother. I think you said brother. Yeah. And so let's say hypothetically, you have a brother who gaslights you and mistreats you. And yet you don't want to not see your parents. You know, you want to see your parents. You don't want to see this gaslighting brother. They're all going to be at the same family gathering. How do you cope with that? You can make a decision about how little or how much you're going to engage with him. That's very important. And you don't even have to explain why. Now, I will say you might even take it a step further. I've worked with people who have said to their parents, because I have had plenty of folks who have had unhealthy relationships with their siblings, where they've said, I'm not inviting them to the next holiday. And you can make a decision what you want to do.
Right.
And allowing the other person to make that choice, it's not up to you. You don't have to make everyone comfortable. Not right. Your job.
Okay, before we go, what have I not asked you about gaslighting or healing or confidence that would be good for everyone to know, if anything?
You had mentioned boundaries, and I'm happy you mentioned that, because one of the things that is a form of a boundary that is important for, as I was saying earlier on, protecting yourself from the potentiality of being gaslit is working on emotional individuation versus a constant agreeability.
Just right? Like your own voice, having your own opinion. And it doesn't have to be abrasive, right? It could be in the little moments. What do you think of this? Somebody who typically says it's nice versus saying, it's funny. I actually started doing that with my dating because I'm seeing someone new who's such a great guy.
Awesome.
And he, on our first date, he ordered oysters. And I honestly hate oysters. I just think they're like the snot of the ocean.
Ditto.
And so I don't judge anyone who eats them. But it's funny because I think in the past, the agreeability in me, which I consider myself to have a voice, I have a whole freaking podcast and book of my voice. But with dating and love, usually I'll try to be more agreeable. And I'm really breaking through that. So he's like, do you want any oysters? And maybe past me would have been like, I'll try one, you know, mm-hmm. But instead I was like, to be honest, I really think they're like the snot of the ocean, but I support you in having your oysters.
I support you in having your oysters. I love that.
Yeah. So it's like just encouraging yourself to be the individual you are. And it doesn't necessarily have to be this like abrasive, like stepping up for yourself thing. It's like these little moments.
Yes, I will always use your oyster comment now. Thank you. Mine is much more boring. It's okay to say you don't like a band or if you want to see a certain movie. You know, that's something that I think why it was so crucial to bring it up in a book specifically for women too. Historically, women have been socialized to be agreeable.
Mm-hmm.
And that increases the likelihood of being targeted. So I would say, listen first to your voice. Listen first to what you want and what you don't want. And understand that if you disagree or you have your own opinion, it's like putting a chip out on the table. And if the other person is willing to pick it up, look at it, examine it, and say, yeah, I may or may not agree with you, but I'm still in relationship with you, that's such a good indicator as to whether or not this person is going to protect your energy and your feelings the way you deserve. And if they don't, dodge the bullet.
Yeah. Love that so much. Okay. This has been so insightful. I'm going to put your book in the show notes for those of you who want to check out Gaslighting Recovery for Women. I mean, how can you not with this conversation? Where else can people learn from you? Where's the best place to go?
So I try to stay pretty active on Instagram. So at Dr. Amelia Kelly with an EY. And then I also have a website, ameliakelly.com, where you can go there to find everything, articles, videos, links to my Insight Timer channel where I share meditations and different courses. And I really do invite people, if there's ever anything you want to learn more about, shoot me a message and I will try my very best to get back to you, because I love the idea of having an ongoing conversation.
Thank you so much for coming on. I love these conversations, and I hope that this sparks something for someone listening today to make some sort of change or even get the strength to get space from someone who's doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into the U-Turn podcast. And thank you again so much for our sponsors. We are here because of you. And to our listeners, thank you for checking out our sponsors. We always pick people and brands that we trust and we believe in. And just for listening to the show, writing your reviews on the Apple app, and just being willing to make your own U-turns. We'll see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.